Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Molly Wheeler, and I will be the host for today's forum. The Hinckley Institute of Politics was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally in Washington, D.C., and in over 55 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to our website, www.hinckley.utah.edu, to learn more. The title of today's forum is Careers in the Foreign Service. Our guest is the Honorable Harry K. Thomas, Jr., an American diplomat. Presently, he is serving as the State Department diplomat in residence for the Southwest area at Arizona State University. Previously, he served as the United States Ambassador to the Philippines from 2010 to 2013, a former United States Ambassador to Bangladesh, and Director General of the United States Foreign Service. Thomas joined the Foreign Service in 1984. In addition to his tenure as Ambassador in Bangladesh, his earlier postings include service in the U.S. embassies in India, Zimbabwe, Nigeria, and Peru. He also served as the Executive Secretary of the U.S. State Department, Director of the Department's Operations Center, and Special Assistant to the U.S. Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice. Please join me in welcoming our guest, the Honorable Harry K. Thomas, Jr.
Thank you, Molly. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Wow, I thought you guys were not as enthusiastic as us at ASU. Maybe it's because of the weather or something up here. So. Good to see snow. No, that's not true. I'm freezing up here. Great to have the opportunity to talk to you all about the Foreign Service, my career, and opportunities that we have in terms of internships, fellowships, and permanent jobs. All through the session, please ask me any question. You could ask me a question on anything. Nothing is off topic. Okay? Afterwards, I ask to take a picture with you because, believe it or not, once a week we send pictures to the Secretary of State, John Kerry. He likes to see pictures of us talking to students. Why? I don't know, but we do as we are told. First lesson in the Foreign Service, you have a boss, right? Okay, first thing I would like you to remember is careers.state.gov. That's our website that has all the information that you may look at in terms of State Department careers. Click on students. Also, click on Keep Me Informed, so they'll always send you information. Okay? I just had a knee operation, but I still like to walk around a few weeks ago. This is my first week back at work. Okay. What do we do in the Foreign Service? We try to have fun, right? Just nodding. Well, that's true. We want to protect America. We want to help Americans get jobs. At the same time, none of you want to be in a boring job, correct? If your job is boring, that is terrible. We want you to be able and want to run to work every day. So, if you are working with me in the Philippines, my last post, I would say, you know what? We need a young man and a young woman to be a model. Who's good looking here? I've never been asked to be a model. Who would like to be a model? Come on. Somebody. Okay, what's your name? Yes.
Me?
Yes.
Jessica.
Jessica, you're our female model. Who's our male model? What's your name?
Nick.
Okay, Nick and Jessica, you are our models. Why would I want you to be a model? Because I'm an ambassador and you got to do what I say? No, because in the Philippines, we were trying to show that American corporations believe in corporate social responsibility, also can make money, and support Philippine businesses who are trying to protect the environment. Now, if we just talk about that, it becomes boring. You're either preaching to the converted or people who don't want to hear. But if you get Nick and Jessica to model boots made by Timberland, jeans made by Wrangler that come from garbage, and you turn my house into a Paris salon, which they did, and you get local TV stars and actors, radio personalities to come, and you broadcast it, and you stream it live, you can get attention for Wrangler, attention for Timberlands, and the Philippines, who are exporting Bon Abaca to the United States. Support environment, get a lot of stars, plus Nick and Jessica. You don't get to keep the Wranglers or the Timberlands because, of course, we have ethics rules, but you can pay for them on a discount. So that's why we would do something like that. Okay? First time as a model. All right? It's not just traditional analysis. You know, I love baseball. I'm from New York City. Unfortunately, I'm a Mets fan, not a Yankee fan, so life is kind of tough. In the Philippines, the number one sport, have you been to the Philippines? What's the number one sport? Basketball, right? They are crazy over basketball, right? I mean, just, they think about Manny Pacquiao, the boxer. It's basketball, right? If you don't know basketball, you can't be effective in the Philippines. But I like baseball. Where did you live in the Philippines?
Isabela.
Okay, we were in Manila, in the capital city, right? Only the very wealthy and the very poor played baseball. We wanted to bring it back. So we worked, went to an area called Smoky Mountain in Tondo, a garbage dump, where kids climb up that mountain each day to get food and items to sell. It's garbage dump. We worked with the mayor and the JCs. Why? Because the ambassador that followed me may not be a baseball fan. We want something sustainable. So if you want something sustainable, you work with local groups. You find a local group. Because the worst thing is a United States government project that ends up being a white elephant of some kind. Because it cannot be sustained. Okay? We need to justify what we're doing to the American people in Congress. So we got their support. We built a so-called Field of Dreams right by this garbage dump. And I can't tell you the stench, especially in most of the year when it's very warm there. We got these kids to play baseball, boys and girls. We partnered with a local university called San Beda, that if these kids could graduate from high school, they would give them scholarships for college, which they couldn't afford to go to. And we brought Ken Griffey Jr., the great baseball player there. Filipinos didn't know who he was, right? They would know a basketball player, right? Every great basketball player came to the Philippines while I was there. Not Ken Griffey Jr. He was very happy. Why? Because nobody knew him. They could ask him, did he play basketball? He goes, nope. And they'd leave him alone. And we took him to a stadium to start teach kids to play baseball. The poor kids did not have gloves. They didn't have uniforms. They didn't know the sport. They were using flip-flops as gloves. Hard refuse as ball. That was 2010. Last summer, 2014, this is Little League baseball, Little League softball. Boys didn't do so well, but the girls, they won the Asian championship and came to Delaware to play in the championship. Those are the type of things that you can do to impact lives in the Foreign Service. And I just wanted to start out with that because many of you may think of the traditional things that we do. But a lot of times it's some of the small things that you do that will change lives. Okay? Now, I could tell you about the time I had Katy Perry in the back of my car in her underwear, but I won't. True story, my wife was with me, so not a problem. But great singer. But we only have 50 minutes for this class. It's okay, it's a clean story, but it's true. It's true. Okay. Now, I'm going to tell you about the Foreign Service, the Civil Service exam. And also our internships. We offer internships 3 times a year, any semester. You can apply summer, spring, fall. For example, October is coming up. That's going to be the deadline for summer 2016. Why? Because you have to have a security clearance, okay, and a health clearance. Excuse me. We have paid and unpaid internships. And we have a brand new program called the United States Foreign Service Internship Program. You can apply paid and unpaid internships to two embassies, say Beijing and Seoul, or two bureaus in Washington, say European Affairs and African Affairs. Or you can split it up between Beijing and African Affairs. United States Foreign Service Internship Program is a new two-year program where you do an internship in Washington after your junior year and an internship in an embassy abroad after your senior year, and that's a paid program. That's guaranteed paid. We've increased our paid internships from about 10% to about 30, 35%. We hope to get higher. My only advice when you're applying for one of these internships, remember the summer is like winning the lotto. Spring and fall, we have only about 800 people apply for about 300 internships. In the summer, you have over 8,000 applying for 1,000. So if you apply for London or Paris or Beijing, it's like playing the lotto. You might win, you might lose, no reflection. So you need to strategize. Think of someplace else that you would go, that you would like to go, that your family would allow you to go to, that a few people are going to apply to. Because the issue is about winning, right? The issue is about being selected. You have to write an essay. And just like I was telling you, for the Foreign Service exam, we have the 13 dimensions. That essay for the internship should cover the 13 dimensions of the Foreign Service, which are in these booklets or on our website. Now, I know your parents love you, but you got to make us love you. What is special about you? And that's more difficult these days because so many students are honor students. So many have done some kind of community service. What is different? You're young. We don't expect you to have won the Nobel Prize. But maybe you did something or you saw somebody do something. Something influenced you. Okay? Something that changed your life or that you saw that's given you thought, concern, pause. Something that you're inquisitive about. Okay? That's for the internships. For our fellowships, we have Payne, Wrangell, and Pickering. Payne is now a new program for the United States Agency for International Development. Wrangell and Pickering are two other fellowships you apply for. Wrangell when you're a senior in January, Payne when you're a senior, they go for you to, we pay part of your graduate school, the graduate school of your choice, and you enter the Foreign Service. You still have to take the exam and give us 5 years. Pickering is senior year of college and graduate school or just graduate school. And we've expanded those to about almost 90 scholarships, fellowships a year. Okay? So those are our internships, our fellowships. The Foreign Service examination, given 3 times a year, up until this year was always given by ACT or Educational Testing Service. This is our first year we're doing it with another corporation called Pearson VUE. Basically the same type of exam. If you've done well on the SAT, you probably do well on the Part 1 of the Foreign Service exam. If not, you need to bone up. That booklet has sample exam. Others on the website also have sample exam. I always tell students to read The Economist all the time. It's the best analysis, and I think everybody in the Foreign Service says the same thing. Have you ever heard of Strunk and White? Well, I'm 58 years old, so when I was young, our teachers told us about a little book, and I still tell it, Elements of Style, Strunk and White. Grammar book, I'm sure it doesn't cost $5, and if it's used, that's okay. Grammar stays the same. You guys are the keyboard generation, right? Losing ability to draft. We don't write in the Foreign Service, we draft, okay? We're snobbish. But it's very important that your grammar be outstanding. Spell check is your enemy. Ending sentences with prepositions. I could go on and on as I do, as I actually teach at ASU also. But grammar is important. Look at trade. Unless you're an economics major, Really look at trade issues. Nothing can happen without money. Look at all of the trade websites, whether it's the EU or NAFTA or Asia-Pacific Economic Forum. All of those websites will give you an understanding of trade. And, of course, American history, international history, culture. That's part one. Part two is that statement. Again, it's like the internship statement. 13 dimensions, tell us why you're special, no grammatical mistakes. It's amazing how many people make grammatical mistakes. I would find the professor at Utah or my high school, who is my favorite creative writing professor, or my most hated creative writing professor, who had the red pen out for everything, and ask him or her to look at it. Part three, however, we're allowed to tutor you. So for part three, if you're in Arizona, you can come down and I or my successor can tutor you, but we also provide tutorials online. And basically, we're putting you in hypotheticals. We're giving you hypotheticals. By then, we know you're really smart. But we want to know, is this a person we want to work with? We want nice, kind, patriotic people, but nice and kind is really important. We don't want jerks. And how does this person react? What's your judgment? Okay? So, if I asked you, what's your name?
Mary.
Mary. It was my grandmother's name. Really. If I said, Mary, plane crashes in Malaysia. All right? This is recently happened a couple of times. All right? You're working in our embassy. You have charge that weekend as a duty officer. What's the first few things you're going to do?
See if any American citizens are injured.
Mm-hmm. What's an appropriate response team?
Local police,
mm-hmm.
police forces.
Mm-hmm.
If it occurred in an instance where local foreign officers, mm-hmm. service officers, families are living close mm-hmm. to the area, perhaps the Marines need to respond and make sure mm-hmm. that those.
No.
Well, that post one.
Mm. Now, Marines, right? Marines' job is to do what?
Protect the local embassy.
Protect the classified information only inside an embassy. Classify information and the ambassador, if necessary. All right? People who protect the embassy are diplomatic security, and they are foreign service specialists, and you can see that in the book. Marines do not protect an embassy. Okay? Classified information. I just say that because people think the Marines are responsible. That's not true. Okay? So your answers, Mary, were excellent, except you forgot one part. What happened? What happened? What subject did I give you? What task did I give you? Plane crash, right? So who makes planes? Only two major companies. Boeing and Airbus. If it's Boeing, it's an American. Airbus, a lot of the parts are made in America. Many of the engines are Pratt & Whitney. That's why I want you to study trade and economics, because you have a huge component. All that, and that's going to bring lawsuits, guaranteed, litigious world. So that's another example of why trade is extremely important. So if you just answered that part, you would do okay, but you would fail the overall thing because you did not mention the trade. Not, I'm not picking on you, okay? Just saying, never forget the trade aspect. You did correct. You always want to talk about American citizens. That's number one. Okay, but there's many times a trade aspect. Okay? Your name?
Bailey.
Bailey, what would happen if there was a humanitarian crisis? Say there was I lived in Bangladesh, there were always monsoons, so there's a monsoon and flood. What is your first reaction going to be then?
Possibly send aid if there were any Americans affected.
Hmm. How are you going to do that? It's okay, it's not a test.
No.
Okay.
Passport records, maybe, or something, see people over there, and then, if you have specific
mm-hmm.
agencies over there, if any of them are affected.
Yes. That's good. Now, how many of you traveled overseas? When I come to Utah, it's always a bunch of traveled overseas. How many of you registered with the U.S. Embassy? Well, if you don't register with the embassy, which takes about 2 minutes, you guys are the helicopter generation. We can't tell your parents anything. Privacy Act, right, HIPAA? You know that? Parents can't know your grades? Well, I paid a lot of money a year for my daughter to go to college. I had to see the grades. But those are the rules. So, Bailey, if your parents called, we couldn't tell them anything about you. Okay, so you always want to register online. Wait, now we know most Americans do not register. So we always estimate it many times over, multiply. But the point is, yes, but what do you have to do before you can bring those American planes in? You have to get permission of the host country. You just can't bring American planes in, whether it's good or bad, right? So you always have to get permission. You work with international agencies, and you're going to decide whether it's the United States Agency for International Development or the military. And there'll be many reasons for that. There's a lot that goes into who pays and what we're trying to do. Most important thing is American citizens, okay? It's a lot of... So when you take that part, remember, American citizens, always, how are you going to alert them? And trade. Think, is there a trade aspect to this? We don't expect you to solve this. After all, we haven't solved Middle East peace, right? 50 to 60 years. We just want to see your progression, your thoughts on that, okay? And that's the Foreign Service exam. After you pass that, you would be brought to Northern Virginia to our training center and assigned to a country. Consular, political, economic, public diplomacy, management are the five tracks we have for officers. But we also have doctors, nurses, diplomatic security, protect our embassies, as we said before, accountants, engineers, office management specialists, architects, interior designers. Those are all our specialists. And that just means you'll do that job forever, whether you're in Washington or overseas. Clearly, I'm not a physician. I can't be a doctor. Okay? Generalists are what you traditionally think about as a political, economic, management, consular officer. I'm a political officer. Okay? So consular officers deal with the consular section, passports, taking care of American citizens. Economic officers do modeling, right? Right, Jessica? They do modeling, but also macro and micro analysis. Political officers do political analysis. Management officers manage the embassy. It's very important these days. Supply chain managers, MBAs, that's where we're looking for people. And public diplomacy are the people who do everything from Fulbright to exchange to all of our social media. And you have to do what works in the country. A young lady over there told me she was lived in Isabela, all right? So you know in the Philippines, important, beauty contest, right? All the time. You don't think you're going to judge one, you're going to judge one, right? Also, Filipinos love spam. I cannot stand spam. Ugh. But if you're going to be effective, you got to like spam. We had a junior officer who had worked for spam. He had been vice president for Asia, but not the Philippines, which had its own vice president because they eat so much spam. And you know that, right? So we sent him out to talk about visas and spam. You got standing room only. That worked in the Philippines. That's not going to work in Germany. It's not going to work in South Africa. So our public diplomacy people have to know the local culture, what works, right, in that culture. I live in Virginia now. Very different than Arizona, very different than Utah. I tell people that, remember Philippines? September, the Burr months, right? September 1st is Christmas season starts, right? They start playing Christmas music in September. My students in Arizona go, oh, that's weird. I go, yes, young ladies, but you're wearing boots and it's 92 degrees. That's weird to me from Virginia. And they go, well, that's the only time we can wear it. Well, it's no harm, no foul. There's nothing wrong with wearing boots in 90-degree weather. That's what you like. It's not a crime. But you have to understand the local culture or you will make mistakes. We Americans don't listen so well. If you see three people talking, two of them are American, one's a foreigner, it'll be the two Americans trying to solve the foreigner's problem. It's not good. Not good. You want to listen. You want to understand the culture. There is a program I heard that was on, I haven't had a chance to watch it. I heard it was on CNN about Jesus, Jesus Project or something. And I heard on radio they were saying, well, one thing that Jesus wanted was alone time. I'm like, whoa, wait a second. Philippines is a huge Catholic country, right? Nobody in the Philippines wants alone time, right? So to me, that said, wait a second, this is not so great a program about Jesus because they don't understand the world culture. They're saying it, maybe Jesus did want alone time, but it would be very hard to convince Filipinos that he wanted alone time because none of them want alone time. You're seen as a loser if you want to go to the movies by yourself. Really, really. So everything is culture. You understand, you have to listen if you're going to get it. Now, we have about 20 minutes left. So, okay, great. I'll tell you a little bit of my career, and then we can open it up for questions. I was born in Harlem, New York, and went to Holy Cross, a Jesuit college. Went to a high school with 6,000 boys and 2 girls. Engineering school. Girls were not didn't think they did engineering. You know? Now that high school has more girls than boys, which is good. But I wanted to go to a small college. I went to Holy Cross, which has one more or two more things than University of Utah and what? My small college of 2,400 people. We've got one NCAA basketball, one NIT basketball championship. Of course, this happened way before I was born. And I think 3 members of the U.S. Supreme Court. So I'm 9, so we're not in bad shape. We have our fundraisers there. Then I went to graduate school at Columbia, New York, to do urban planning. I wanted to save the world, save downtrodden neighbors. And I was working for a man named Edward J. Logue. If any of you have been to New York, he did Roosevelt Island. If you've been to Boston, he did Faneuil Hall and Quincy Market. He was a Yalie, and he had been in the Foreign Service for 5 years, and he told me about it. In those days, the Foreign Service was really dominated, as it was even when I joined, by East Coast Ivy League. Somebody was from Utah, trust me, they went to Harvard. If they were from Arizona, they went to Yale. Ed Logue wore J. Press suits. Inside J. Press suit, here, where the label would be, was J. Press, which is the Yale gate. George Shultz was Secretary of State, and he had the Princeton Tiger tattooed on his butt. No, it's true, he does. Okay? That's the way the Foreign Service was. Ivy, little Ivy, he told me about it. I went to the library. There's no internet then. And I didn't like it. It looked kind of snobbish. I liked the United States Agency for International Development, and I liked the CIA, because I grew up in the James Bond era, you know, girls, fast cars, and all this. So I wrote both, and they rejected me. So I had to take the Foreign Service exam. When I joined the Foreign Service, the game that you guys have never heard of, because it's a game called Trivial Pursuit, it was out. And these guys, 2 guys in my class, won it without giving up to die. And I was like, intimidated. Wow. And then President Reagan was going to Organization of Latin American Unity, OAS, Organization of American States Summit. And Castro was going to be there. And they said, should he shake his hand? And I said, of course you should shake somebody's hand. They were like, oh, no, no, be support of communism. I was like, oh, God, now I'm in trouble, you know? Later I found out you better shake somebody's hand unless they really, really are Idi Amin or something. But I had never traveled overseas. I had never left the United States, and I didn't speak a foreign language. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this job, because other than coming to Utah, when I go to Idaho, Nevada, and much of Arizona, I meet many students who haven't traveled overseas, except maybe some to the Mexico border. You have a lot of kids, obviously, up here who've traveled overseas, but very few have gone, obviously, to these East Coast Ivy League schools anymore. And America has changed, and we were trying to get the Foreign Service to change. So I joined, and they sent me to train me in Spanish and sent me to Peru to do visa work, consular work, which is non-immigrant visas, immigrant visas. Had to go visit jails. I'm from New York City. First time I was in a jail in Peru. Most drug dealers who didn't have the money to bribe the police. Most of the world, you know, the police are fairly corrupt. We used to take gifts into prison for the guards, you know, American products to sample. I wouldn't say gifts, just so our people would not be abused. They may be drug dealers and all that, but they are American citizens, and they should not be. Should not be. Their human rights should not be violated. From there, I went to northern Nigeria. We landed in Nigeria, and the first sign I saw was, "Black is beautiful. Drink Guinness Stout." And I was like, "Oh, this is trade again, Mary, all right? This is all about trade. I don't like Guinness Stout. I thought it was a terrible drink, you know? But in Nigeria, they love Guinness Stout, the British influence." I lived up in the Muslim north, the area down there, Boko Haram. This terrible group is, but in those days, it was a very, very peaceful era. Nothing worked. Gas is about 20 cents a gallon, so my little Nissan flew. But because nothing worked, I learned to do a lot under an ambassador named Princeton Lyman. So if his name was Princeton, what were his siblings' name? Yes, Yale, Harvard, and Sister Wellesley. And they had all gone to, like, Princeton had gone to Harvard and Wellesley, Yale. No joke, true story. It was a great man, great man. So I learned about how to do things where things don't work, almost like being in the Foreign Service as a Peace Corps volunteer. but it was a wonderful experience. My next overseas assignment was to Harare, Zimbabwe. It was the frontline states in those days. Zimbabwe is on the border with South Africa. It was still apartheid in South Africa. I got to meet Nelson Mandela 3 times, the first time he got out of jail. Great, great, great man. Went to the University of Zimbabwe to see him give his speech, and God, his speech was so boring. It was so boring. But it's Nelson Mandela, right? At the end of his speech, he goes, "Do you guys mind if I talk a few more minutes?" I'm like, "Sure." And he put his notes away, and he talked from the heart about how he had been jailed all these years. And everything he said, he believed, but he didn't know. He didn't know if he could love his children, if he could love his wife, because he wasn't around them. He didn't know if he could really build a country. He didn't know if he could forgive. And he went on, everybody, tears coming down everybody's eyes. Got to meet him a couple of more times. He's a great man. That country, Zimbabwe, is governed by Robert Mugabe, who's Jesuit educated like I am, and Fidel Castro, and he is still ruling that country and has run it into the ground, unfortunately. but I learned, as a political officer, I had to learn not only about human rights, but trade there, because Zimbabwe had the world's largest tobacco floor. Bausch & Lomb gets their contact lenses and these things from their Corning glassware from there. And I saw years later, when Mandela was given the Congressional Gold Medal, the congressman from Jamestown, New York, was the one leading the charge for that. Why was that? Republican congressman from Jamestown, New York. He had formerly been head of his family company, Corning Glassware. His brother was now head. But where did they source all of their raw materials? South Africa and Zimbabwe. So altruism and business. Business is business. Always. It meshes. Nothing illegal, but business is business. After Zimbabwe, next overseas assignment after a year of Hindi, which is my toughest year in the Foreign Service learning Hindi, was to go to India. I lived in a place called Kashmir, Srinagar in the north, most beautiful place I've ever been. We were trying to get an American, some Brits, and Norwegians back who had been kidnapped. We never got them back. We found that Norwegian was beheaded by a group called Al Faran that we had never heard about. That was 1995 to 96. Lived on the Indian cantonment. Every time Muslims went to prayer, we got shelled. And we got, you know, learn a lot about each other. If you fast forward to 1998, when I was back working in Washington, an Indian airliner was hijacked, taken to Nepal. The Indian government was asked to give up some Pakistani Brits, Brits born in Britain but of Pakistani descent, who had kidnapped Americans. This is why we had been living up in Trinidad, because they had wanted them released and we wouldn't trade for them. The Indians traded. The Indian foreign minister flew to Kabul, Afghanistan with these guys, and they let the hijackers let the Indian airliner go. These guys landed in Kabul, and they were given over to a person we had never heard about and we soon forgot, named Mullah Omar. He was head of a group called the Taliban that we didn't pay attention to. Major mistake. And they promised never to engage in terrorism again. 2001, when I was working at the White House, I worked there 2000-2001, National Security Council. I handled Afghanistan and India and Pakistan. January 2001, the Daniel Pearl, the Wall Street Journal reporter, was kidnapped and beheaded by this same group, by these same men. We later found out that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, one of the 9/11 planners, was involved in that. Now, if you back up a few years to 1995, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and his cousin Ramzi Youssef were arrested in the Philippines. What were they trying to do? Sorry? No, they weren't in Mindanao. They were trying to learn how to fly planes into buildings. That's how Ramzi Youssef was captured. So it's hard to put all those dots together. It is almost impossible. But that's another reason why we have to listen, understand culture, understand lessons, understand that people have different aspirations than we do. That same time, right before I left India, nuclear explosions. The Indians and the Pakistanis let off their nuclear bombs in the spring of 98. And the Indians were so happy. And we couldn't understand it. Why are they so happy? They couldn't keep electricity on. No, really. I mean, it was, and we couldn't understand it. And of course, we were, again, making the mistake of looking at it from our perspective. From them, it was so nationalist. They were a major country. They were a player by having nuclear weapons. And I'm not going to wade into the politics of Iran and Netanyahu as they're going on yesterday, but I can tell you I've never been to Iran. I'm not a specialist on that, but I would bet that the Iranians feel the same thing that the Indians felt in terms of pride. So it's our job in the Foreign Service, if you choose to join, to get inside, understand their minds. Why? What motivates them? Take your time to learn, to listen. Culture. Otherwise, you won't realize that this circle from Ramzi Youssef to Daniel Pearl has been made right under your eye because you couldn't believe that somebody would fly a plane into the World Trade Center. In Bangladesh, I had to learn a lot about trade, again, Mary, because a lot of clothing, off-the-rack clothing, comes from Bangladesh. Women were making about 12 cents an hour. They made 25 cents an hour. Of course, they would have been okay. A lot of human rights issues with that, but we wanted women working. Why? 3.5 million women working. Because there were Islamists who wanted them in the home behind the burqa. And getting them out, working, part of economics, is very, very important. Bangladesh is the home of Dr. Muhammad Yunus, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, Grameen Bank, who started a great, great self-help program. It doesn't make women rich. But what it does is you see the pride in their faces when they're able to have their own money, when they can buy school books for their daughters. Tremendous psychological things. Another lesson for us. We have the death penalty in the United States, right? Bangladesh has a death penalty. How do they administer the death penalty? Well, anybody friends in this class? Any of you guys friends? You guys know each other? Well, Molly and Jane are friends, right? You work together? Well, if they're on death row next to each other, Bangladesh, okay, Molly, I'll tell you what, you're on death row. If you hang Jane, I'll give you 30 to 90 days more life. And what would you say? Goodbye, Jane. That's what happens. They inherited this from the British, who were using this during the Gandhi period when Bangladesh was part of India to divide and conquer. And they've kept it. Saves money. They don't believe it's cruel and inhumane. Different way of looking at it. I believe it's cruel and inhumane, but they don't. You have to understand, doesn't mean you have to agree. They also have the death penalty. In the United States, death penalty, whether you approve it or disapprove of it, is for capital punishment. In Bangladesh, they use it for acid throwing. A lot of times, young girls are promised to family, of course they've never met, that family says no, they've lost face, the father or somebody else will throw acid on this young girl's face. This figure with no future. The New York Times had a story, I think, on India about this the other day. But that is the death penalty, which wealthy women got their husbands to push through Parliament. I've seen these women, their lives are over. And I'm not saying whether I support or oppose it. I'm just saying these are things you have to look at because people are looking at it through a different lens. Just like in India, where women are really pressured to have males, right? India and China have more males than females. Poor women cannot have go to the OBGYN. They can't find out whether it was a boy or a girl. Wealthy women can. Poor women, a lot of times, if they have first, second girl, it'll be the mother-in-law who will take the baby out and smother it to death. Not value, can't afford it. It's something against human rights, one of those things that we combat. And the last thing I'll tell you before I take questions, how do we, again, change lives? In the Philippines, you had about 4,000 women dying a year from childbirth, bleeding in their uterus. They could not afford a shot, something you would get in a drip after you give birth in the United States or most major cities around the world. It cost a dollar a day. These ladies could not afford this dollar. So the United States Agency for International Development, the State Department, we work with two American pharmaceutical companies to come up with a syringe and shot. The syringe can be kept out for up to 14 days. Anybody can put it in to the fatty part of a woman's buttocks or calf after she gives birth, and we'll save lives. And we got those pharmaceutical companies to donate it for free. So again, those are small things. I didn't talk about Mindanao, where we have 700 troops, but we've had troops for 100 years, or the peace negotiations, or even the military negotiations that I've been involved in my career, because I just wanted you to see the small things that we do that change lives, affect lives, and I wanted you to, again, and I think this audience is a little easier than most, understand the importance of language and the culture and listening. So now I'm happy. I think Molly has the mic to take any questions that you may have.
Absolutely. So we will devote the remainder of the time for questions. If you'll just speak directly into the microphone, provide your name and major, and then briefly state your question.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. My name is Ariel De Jesus, and I'm a metallurgical engineering major. Mm. My question is, you mentioned having to eat Spam in order to...
I didn't eat Spam.
Oh, you didn't. Okay.
I've eaten a lot of things, but by then I was the ambassador, so I didn't have to eat. But I ate balut.
Oh, yeah.
I ate balut.
I don't like that. Okay. So, but how do you handle situations where you disagree about something, but you have to accomplish accomplish something?
Like eating... eating things?
Well, not eating things, but maybe, like, I don't know, as an ambassador, you have to kind of work with a group of people and
sure.
You have to disagree about sure. Some things, but, you know, where's that limit, I guess?
Well, I'm not so sure I understand your question fully there. I'll start on the small level. drinking water is important. Going into somebody's house in the third world, and drinking water is important. They may understand, they'll have the water out And they won't expect you to drink it, but drinking it helps to get that trust. Or eating whatever, whether it's balut or whatever, with them. It helps you that you don't think you're better than them. In terms of larger things, clearly we would not do anything that would force us to lie, or steal, or cheat. That's not what we do, and that's not what the United States represents. But are you going to always work with Boy Scouts? No. The United States, I don't understand. We're always looking for virgins. There are no virgins. This is politics. This is the world. And we get disappointed when somebody behaves in a manner that's not, because we are failing to look inside. Whenever we have a congressman visiting who's real bluster, we always get somebody that went to an American university to talk to him. Because they're, oh, you went to an American university. Oh, that means he's like us. Not exactly. Not exactly. But it cools that congressman down because he's afraid to look, to understand, to listen. Okay? You have to be able to do that, but you always have to keep your honor, your honesty. But yes, you're going to be working with a lot of bad people. If we're trying to find out what happened in Russia over the last few weeks, does that mean we stopped talking to Putin and his folks? No. We stopped talking to people in Cuba for 50 years. Didn't get us much, all right? So you're always going to talk to people, and a lot of times you're not going to succeed. But it's a long, slow process. You have to understand that we do stand for our values in the United States. They may not stand for them. We're trying to get them to do certain things. Sometimes they will, and sometimes they will not. We have leverage that other countries do not. That's why we can fight human trafficking. That's why we can fight child kidnapping and things in ways that other countries choose to or cannot. But you're going to be working with some good people and a lot of times some bad people. Yes.
My name is Nate Fromberg. I'm an undecided major as of mm-hmm. right now, but I was just curious to know, say that you do speak a different language, mm-hmm. you're on a fluent level, or you speak multiple mm-hmm. languages fluently. Mm-hmm. How does the U.S. kind of, I guess, favor you in a way of putting you into that country where you mm-hmm. speak that language fluently?
Okay. If you pass the exam, once you pass the exam, if you speak a critical language, Chinese, Hindi, Urdu, Japanese, Korean, you can take a phone examination. If you pass that, then you will get more points. And you'll have to spend most of the initial part of your career in that part of the world. Okay? If not, then after you've been in 4 years, it becomes a competitive bidding process. So you can bid on India to study Hindi or Thailand to study Thai, those things. That's the way it works after that. Okay? And it's whether it's 1 year, 2 years, or 24 weeks. Romance languages will be about 24 weeks. Other languages will be 2 years, but there's nothing like living in somebody's house or their country to really understand. We're trying to give you an excellent foundation. You're not going to become fluent even after 2 years of Mandarin. Yes. Okay, whoever's next.
For those in that want to join the Foreign Service with a family, what are the challenges of that, mm-hmm. specifically, generally, and then specifically with the availability of medical care in those countries that don't have doctors present?
Well, I've never been in a country that didn't have a doctor. Most places, the medical care is pretty good if you're in the capital city. If you're out in the hinterland, you have an accident, that can be a challenge. for those of you who traveled, most of the world has either you're very rich or you're very poor. And for the very rich, they have hospitals. They also have great doctors, or we evacuate you by plane or helicopter if that is necessary. And just like most of the places that we work are safer than most large American cities in terms of a crime rate, we don't worry about that. Our schools are very good. The schools, the international schools, are top rate. But then each child is different. You have two children. One child may flourish in moving from school to school. One child may not. But that would be the same as if you're in the military or in a corporation. And I can't tell you how your children will be. Every child is different in how they react to that. For spouses, right now about 15% of our spouses are what we call tandem couples, where both are doing that. That becomes harder. Everybody wants to have a career. We have jobs in embassies. They may be a job. It may not be in your career. Probably will not be in your career. Everybody doesn't want to teach. But marriage, whether you're here or overseas, is about compromise. And these are things you have to talk about with your spouse before and after during your career. But I will say this, for almost 30 years, the Department of Justice has the lowest attrition rate in the U.S. government of government agencies. The State Department is number two. But if you separate the Foreign Service from the Civil Service, the State Department, the Foreign Service has over 30 years of the lowest attrition rate. So people don't leave. They may grind and grouse, but they don't leave. They love it for the most part. But every child's different. Every marriage is different. Schools. We can't meet every need for special needs children. 5 minutes. I think that's two questions, maybe. Yes. Go ahead.
My name is Jessica, and yes, my major is undecided. I know your name. Awesome. So as a Foreign Service officer, you travel a lot, and I just wanted to know how you manage your a personal time with your family and your work. I'm sure you don't spend a lot. You can't spend a lot of time with your family. What are their reaction to your job?
Well, I think we have more time with our families overseas than in Washington, frankly. Just because of the way things work out. Very difficult for families to have breakfast and dinner together in Washington because of schedules and all kinds of things. And overseas, that's usually easy. And especially a lot of places overseas, you may eat dinner and your children, your children may eat dinner, you just sit at the table because the dinner you're going to is at 9 or 10 or 11 o'clock. Nobody comes on time to these places. So I found most of my colleagues would say that we have more time overseas. Washington is difficult. When I was working in the National Security Council, I came downstairs in my house one day. I looked outside and I said, what is that? It was my backyard. I hadn't even seen it so long. But I only stayed there a year because of that. And I think that in any career, you want to advance career level, you're going to have to work super hard. And it is going to be up to you and your spouse or your partner how you manage your time and how you manage each other. That's it. Yes?
My name is Lisa, and yes, I'm studying political science, international studies, and Russian. My question was, at what age do people typically join the Foreign Service? Is it after undergrad or graduate school? Because I know you mentioned the fellowships.
Yeah, the average age is 29. Okay. You can join from 20 to 59 and a quarter. For those of you, the next Foreign Service exam is in June. For those of you who are 20, I take it now. You can take it once a year. And it's no harm, no foul if you still have a year or two left in college. You can see, wow, if you've passed, we'll wait for you. You can defer. If you don't pass, you can see where the areas you need to study. Most people, over half people have graduate degrees, but that's not required. It's more language skills will help you pass the exam more. You do not have to be. You have to be a college graduate to be a specialist, and everything except office management specialist. You do not have to be a college graduate to be a Foreign Service officer like I am. My best friend in the Foreign Service was a postman, dropped out of college twice. Now, the college was Cambridge, and he's just not meant for school. But there are several people who have been firemen and police who never graduated from university. And that's good. It's good to have, somebody else looking at something a little differently. Okay? Well, thank you all. And I'm going to ask Molly if she can come, and I'll go stand in the middle and take a couple of pictures, and we see if Mr. Secretary Kerry likes these.
Excellent. Please join me in thanking our speaker.